Ohioinstitute.com/evaluation.
Good morning. Welcome to Radioactivity. I'm Rob Lori. Well, coming up, thousands of people around the country will be holding an event this weekend calling for the protection of our coastlines from pollution. We'll speak with the organizer of one local event in a moment, and later we'll speak with one of the country's leading progressive writers who's coming to St. Petersburg this Sunday. First, two listener comments about yesterday's program on which we interviewed veteran intelligence officer Paul Pillar about the possibility of the U.S. going to war with Iran. Here's what two listeners had to say.
This is Kent Norton. I'm in Boston and Sarasota. I'm the one that lived in Iran. This is one of the most exacting, great programs that you allowed this guy to talk. You asked relevant questions, and there was a great explanation of the Middle Eastern problem. I just want to clarify that the Iranians are the government of Iran. The Persians are the people. They speak an Indo-European language called Farsi. It is similar to Arabic, but the script is different. It's closer to Aramaic, the tribal language that Jesus Christ spoke many years ago and is still spoken in parts of Afghanistan. The point is, Sunni is the strict interpretation of the Quran, very strict. And the Shiite is a more liberal interpretation that the Iranians go under. Iranians have cable TV, they have computers, they talk to people all over the world, they do all kinds of really neat stuff. They're very neat, cultured artists, musicians, they're wonderful people, and it's a completely different culture, and the religion is different, and they really are terrified of a war with America.
Show today concerning the United States' possible engagement in Iran, I really think it's time for all this to stop. We have to learn a lesson. Unless going back, to Vietnam and before Vietnam, and of course Ho Chi Minh knew this, that if you don't have the support of the indigenous population, you're not going to get anywhere, no matter how many billions and trillions and technology and weaponry. It just doesn't work. It's the villagers. It's the people in that country. It has to be organically grown. I would like to see the United States become change their foreign policy. It's really pie-in-the-sky thoughts, but if you can just picture John Lennon's song, Imagine, playing in the background during this call. We could drop food, supplies, shelter, political information, true, not propaganda, true information. Yes, we have flaws. I think we need to change our policy drastically to a policy of peace and encouragement, but not supplying human bodies and money for military. No. We need to keep it peaceful and happy. And yes, it's great sadness. There's sadness all over the world. It's terrible. But unless these things are organic, their countries will not change. We have to grow up and realize this. Thank you again for a wonderful show, Rob. This is John from Tampa.
There you have two listener comments that came in after yesterday's program. Well, this weekend, from Tarpon Springs south to Englewood and elsewhere around the U.S., thousands of people will gather to mark the 10th anniversary of Hands Across the Sand, and it calls for a ban on offshore oil and gas drilling and protection of the water quality and the marine life. One of the organizers of one of the local events is Adrienne Micelli. She's an organizer at one of the events in Sarasota County, and she joins us on the phone right now. Adrienne, welcome back to WMNF. Good to have you here.
Hi, Rob. Thank you again for having me back. I really appreciate it.
So tell us where your event is this weekend.
Well, my event will be on Siesta Key Beach, the public beach, and we will be gathering around 10 a.m., 10, 15 a.m., and we will kick off around 10:30. So that's where we'll be.
And that's tomorrow?
Yes, tomorrow the 18th. This is done actually every third Saturday in the month of May, and it's an annual event. It's been going on, like you said, for 10 years now, and I'm very, very excited to be a part of it.
Now, Adrian, I saw a report in the Tampa Bay Times this week that there's some water quality problems in Sarasota and Manatee County. Have you been to the beach in the last few days? Have you seen anything at the beach that would cause alarm?
Well, no, I personally have not been to the beach in a very, very long time. Since last summer when all that was going on with the waters here, I have really not been to the beach, and it's very unfortunate. But I have seen things that were posted on the internet regarding the algae that has returned, the Lingvia bacteria that's going on with the mat forming. So there's a whole bunch of things going on, and I'm aware of what's going on, but no, I have not been to the beach.
So, Adrian, tomorrow when Hands Across the Sand is held, not only in Siesta Key, but all up and down the coast here in Florida, what are you calling for?
Well, first of all, I just want to say that this is a global event. So it's not just all along the coast. Last year, 18 states were involved, and 7 countries were involved, including Germany and Australia and, I believe, New Zealand. So this is really a big, big thing, and I'm so excited. But what we're calling for is basically protecting our coast from dirty and dangerous offshore drilling, and we want to say no to dirty fuels and yes to clean energy.
Are you concerned that the Trump administration, with the new Interior Secretary, may be planning to drill closer to the Florida coastline?
Yes, I'm very concerned about that. I have kind of heard, you know, rumors and speculation about that might be happening. And, of course, we will do everything we can to defend and protect our waters and pray and hope that it doesn't happen, because it's catastrophic on all counts for something like this to be happening.
This new algae bloom off the coast of Manatee in Sarasota County, it too is fueled by nutrients in the water. Last year, the red tide bloom was catastrophic for Southwest Florida. What message do you want Tallahassee to hear, and what do you want Washington to hear about nutrients in the water?
Well, basically, I just want them to be aware that there's so many issues here. It's not, and I'm not a scientist, so I can't speak scientifically, but there's just a conundrum of issues here, from the fertilizer runoff to the Lake Okeechobee, to the phosphate mining that's going on here in Florida. And then, of course, we have the drilling, we have the fracking, and there's just so many issues. If we could just take a step in a right direction to rectify some of these issues, and I do not know how to do that. I just know how to be an activist and do what I do to bring, you know, to bring awareness. And really that's what I'm trying to do, and call upon people around here to just be aware of what's going on. Don't bury your head in the sand. Be a part of joining us together, holding hands in the sand, to bring awareness to this. And hopefully legislation will be passed to improve our quality of life here in Florida, because truthfully, I fear our quality of life is going downhill here because of what's going on in our environment.
We're talking with Adrian Micelli. She's one of the organizers of Hands Across the Sand. Tomorrow takes place tomorrow morning, all up and down this coast, and as Adrian said, around the world. She's in Siesta Key. So, Adrian, you're not really a full time activist. This is just something that you do once a year. But how did you get involved in this? Why do you care about this?
Well, actually, I'm not a full time activist. I'm a part time activist, but I do. I do a lot of events with local groups, Food and Water Watch, Hands Along the Water, different things like that. And, you know, last summer when the destruction happened and I saw what was going on, I knew I had to be involved. So I just jumped on the chance to do it. And that's been since last August. And truthfully, I've been doing it ever since. I've been at meetings, rallies, gatherings, events, all different things to create and promote awareness. And once I'm awake now to what's going on, I can't look away. I have to be involved.
Because I think when I first talked with you a year ago, you had mainly been, you know, in your line of work. You're a hairdresser, and you hadn't been that active.
Exactly. Now, I own a hair salon. I don't do hair, but I do own the salon. And, yes, I hadn't been. It was always kind of something in the background, and I was aware of political events and the things going on in the environment. But last summer just changed the game for me. It really did. And I'm not going to stop fighting, and I'm going to be involved in every opportunity that I can to bring awareness. That's where I'm at right now, Rob.
Well, Adrian, last summer was certainly devastating. I hope we don't have another one of those toxic algae blooms like we did last year. But now we've got this mat algae that's out in parts of Sarasota, Manatee County. Remind us again, yes, where in Siesta Key, where people can find Hands Across the Sand tomorrow. And also, what's the best website to look it up for their local event?
Oh, yes. Well, on Facebook, we did create events for that. But the best event, the best way to look it up is the handsacrossthesand.org. And if you go onto that website, that's their actual website, and you say, look under events, and you click on, they'll have all the states. And then if you just click on Florida, it'll show you all the events that are going on in Florida. But, yes, I will be at Fiesta Key 10 a.m. tomorrow at the old Pavilion.
All right. Well, Adrian Micelli, thanks a lot for coming on WMNF. HandsAcrossTheSand.org. 10 o'clock tomorrow morning, up and down the coast here in Florida and all around the U.S. and around the world. Adrian, is there anything else you want to add?
Yeah, I just want to say that we want to just leave behind only footprints. And that come with signs if you'd like, and come with your love for our environment, love for our waters, and stand with us for 15 minutes in solidarity, along with many others standing all over the world. And we greatly appreciate you, and I know that the directors of Hands Across the Sand greatly appreciate everyone coming out as well.
Well, Adrian Micelli, thanks a lot. Thanks for coming on MNF.
Thank you, Rob. Thank you again. I appreciate it.
All right. Good luck tomorrow on Siesta Key.
Okay, have a great day.
Take care. Bye-bye. And one of our listeners just emailed us and said that the brown gumbo algae matting has shown up on Holmes Beach and Anna Maria Island, too. So that's terrible. Well, you're listening to 88.5 FM. This is WMNF in Tampa. In a moment, we're going to meet one of the leading progressive writers in the country who's going to be in St. Petersburg on Sunday. It's music from Oliver Mitsukudzi. You're listening to WMNF in Tampa. Our next guest is Sasha Abramski, a longtime writer for The Nation magazine. His articles also appear on the website Truth Out. He's one of the leading progressive writers in the country. He'll be speaking this Sunday in St. Petersburg. His latest book is called Jumping at Shadows, The Triumph of Fear and the End of the American Dream. And Sasha Abramski, welcome to WMNF. Good to have you here.
Hey, it's good to be on.
So, Sasha, I want to start by asking you about the president's proposal for immigration. Let me just play 40 seconds of a report from the Associated Press and then get your take on this. This is a report from this morning from the Associated Press about the president's announcement yesterday about immigration.
The proposal would end decades of family-based policy prioritizing green cards for those with relatives here, which the president says comes at the expense of keeping high-skilled workers in the U.S.
We discriminate
against genius.
The new plan would give the bulk of green cards to what the president calls the totally brilliant. He's billing it as a merit-based approach, which House Speaker Nancy Pelosi says is condescending.
They're saying family is without merit.
The plan would need approval from Democrats in a divided Congress, and they're already panning it. The president, though, tweets there's a good chance they'll sign off. Sagar Magani at the White House.
Sasha, the president has called what's happening with immigration right now, undocumented immigration, a crisis. What's your take on what's going on? How the president is reacting to immigration, how the country is reacting to immigration?
Well, my first take is that nothing that Trump says on immigration should be taken on good faith, because he manipulates the truth. He demonizes groups. He goes after particular religious minorities, particular racial minorities. And I think he's lost all, if he ever had it, he's lost all good faith on this issue. So my first take would be, whatever proposal Trump says, we should view it through the lens that he is essentially a nationalist who is proposing policies that he thinks will keep America whiter. So that's number one. But the second thing is, when he says it's got a good chance of success, this policy is as dead on arrival as any of the proposals that Trump has proposed over the last few years. And the reason for that is it flies in the face of 55 years of immigration policy. You know, this notion that we've been a disaster for 50 years because we've had family unification is completely crazy. It's been actually one of the most extraordinary parts of post-World War II America is this idea that we're a generous enough and a big enough country that we can welcome in families, that we don't break up parents from children or siblings or husbands and wives, that isn't who we are as a country. So my take is that this is just one more bigoted policy in a long line of bigoted Trump policies.
I think what the president has been suggesting since he began his campaign is that the U.S. is about to be overrun by people, especially from the south of our border, from Mexico, Honduras, Guatemala. This idea that we might be overrun as a country that has more than 300 million people in it. What's your take on that?
Well, look, I grew up in England, and England is a country with nearly 60 million people, and it's a fraction the size of the United States. In terms of population density, Europe is far more densely populated than the United States. The idea that the United States, which is more than 2,500 miles from California to the East Coast, that's about 1,500 miles from Seattle down to San Diego, the idea that a country this large somehow is full, that we have no more room, therefore go home, as Trump put it when he was dealing with desperate asylum seekers on the southern border, is complete lunacy. And in actual fact, one of the things that keeps the American economy dynamic is the fact that we replenish ourselves, that we do bring in more immigrants and more labor. And that's important because the American population, like many other first world populations, is an aging population, which means we have more old people, less young people. And if we don't replenish our markets with immigrants, we're going to suffer the same fate that other aging economies suffer, which is we're going to become out of balance. And so, you know, on every level, on a moral level, on an economic level, on a level of what it means to talk about the American community, at every level, Trump's policies on immigration take this country in the wrong direction.
It seems like with every wave of immigration, whether it's Catholics of some stripe, you know, Catholics from Italy or Catholics from Germany in the 1800s, late 1800s, the Chinese in the late 1800s, Jewish people in the early part of the 20th century, the Irish, another group of Catholics that this country feared domestically. We have fear of these new waves of immigration every 20 or 30 or 50 years, of fearing of what I think the people that live here think of as outsiders or foreigners or people of a different race.
That's right. And in the 19th century, the people who were against immigration were known as know-nothingers. And I think we're seeing the same thing again today, that we're now in the 21st century. Our country looks more diverse and in many ways is more diverse than it's ever been before. And a certain percentage of the American public gets very scared by that. They get scared by the cultural change, the linguistic change, the change in how people look and how people talk and so on and so forth. And I think we're in a know-nothing moment, that there's a considerable percentage of the American population that is so scared by demographic change that it's willing to embrace the coarsest and the crudest and the most violent of political movements in order to preserve a certain level of whiteness in America. And, you know, to me, this is absolutely extraordinary, because when I go to the great cities in America, and I'm traveling all the time for work, and when I go to the great cities, the thing that always strikes me as amazing is the diversity. You know, I'm in Miami at the moment doing reporting. I was in Phoenix last week doing reporting. I was in New York the week before that doing reporting. And everywhere I go, I can meet people from all over the world. And to me, that's enriching. To me, that makes for a much, much more dynamic culture. And I love it. It's one of the things I find most fascinating about America is the ability to embrace diversity. And this idea that we can somehow wall ourselves off, physically wall ourselves off, but maybe more importantly, psychologically and culturally wall ourselves off from the rest of the world, to me, that's insanity. I mean, it's the craziest thing that a country as breathtakingly diverse as this would try and shred all of that diversity.
Well, our guest is Sasha Abramski. He writes for The Nation magazine. His articles appear on the website Truth Out. His latest book is Jumping Its Shadows, The Triumph of Fear and the End of the American Dream. And he'll be in St. Petersburg this Sunday at 4:30 at Temple Beth El. He'll be speaking about fear and trembling, the face of immigration today, and it's part of the Leif Neeson Social Justice Lecture Series. So it's, the rise of these people who are complaining about outsiders is not just something that's happening in the U.S., it's happening around the world, where you've got people who are speaking against immigration in Western Europe, for instance. Some of these nationalist leaders are lurking. Certainly France has its problem. Other countries in Western Europe have the problem. What's going on in the U.S. and around the world that's connected? I mean, why at this time in world history do we see this rise of nationalism?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, the idea that it's a global phenomenon, I think, is increasingly the case. So you look at what happens in Italy with Salvini and his politics. You look at Viktor Orban in Hungary. Or you look at what's happened in the UK with the Brexit vote. And, you know, to me, that was absolutely extraordinary that you have a country whose population has access to living in 27 countries and to studying and to working in 27 other countries. And a majority of the population voted to shred all of that because they were worried about outsiders coming into the United Kingdom. And so I think you're absolutely right that there's something in the global water at the moment. I think what it is, you know, there are a few things going on. One of them is that we have globalized remarkably rapidly, that the way technology has changed in the last 30 years has completely changed the way that we engage with each other and the way that we engage with the rest of the world. And in one way, it's made it much more interconnected, and air travel has made it much more interconnected. There are a bunch of things that are going on that mean that wherever you live, increasingly you're part of a global culture. But the backlash to that is that people feel unmoored, that an increasing number of people feel that their core cultural identities are under threat, that things that they and their parents and grandparents and great-grandparents have taken for granted can no longer be taken for granted. And, you know, change is always scary. Change is scary whether you're talking about technological change or whether you're talking about demographic change or whether you're talking about change in the way we're employed and the kinds of work that we do. And when all of those things come together at the same time, when you have mass migration, when you have all of the pressures put on the Earth's resources, when you have climate change, when you have environmental degradation, when you have all of these things going on simultaneously, it creates a political tinderbox. And if you have demagogues who are willing to exploit that political tinderbox, then you have the makings of a political crisis. And if you add into the mix, and I'll sort of add one more thing in, or two more things, if you add into the mix the growing fear of terrorism, and if you add into the mix the growing fear of economic insecurity in the wake of 2008, the sense of precariousness, you have all of the ingredients for crisis. And so someone like Donald Trump comes along in the United States, and he whips up crisis because he knows that his road to power lies in creating as much anxiety and fear as possible. Same thing in Hungary, same thing in Turkey, same thing in Modi's India, that if you can whip up fear of an outsider group or a minority group or many minority groups, you can do an awful lot of damage politically. And I think we're in an era of strongmen leaders who have realized that demagoguery is actually their route to securing power.
Well, it's always dangerous to compare times, but if we look back in the 1930s, similar times where you had Franco's rise in Spain, although he sat out World War II ostensibly, but we also saw the rise of right-wing movements in the U.S. and England, and right-wing movements succeeded in Germany and Italy, and Japan linked up with those fascist movements in Europe. Are we at that point where there could be this emerging new axis?
Well, we're clearly at a point where traditional, or what we see as traditional post-World War II relationships and geopolitical alliances are breaking down. So you have this idea that America, which for decades was seen as upholding a liberal world order, is now stepping back. And when Trump is on the international stage, he's clearly deeply uncomfortable with liberal political leaders like Macron in France or Trudeau in Canada or Merkel in Germany. And he's much more comfortable when he's dealing with autocrats, whether it's someone like Erdogan in Turkey or Viktor Orban, who just came to the White House, or El-Sisi from Egypt, or the leaders of Saudi Arabia, that whenever there's a choice to be made on the international stage, Trump sides with autocracy. And I think the immense danger at the moment is precisely because America's got such a big global footprint. There's that old saying that when America sneezes, the rest of the world catches a cold. Because America is so dominant globally, militarily, diplomatically, economically, and so on, the direction America chooses to take has a huge ripple effect. And so if America withdraws from considering human rights, for example, to be something worth considering on the international stage, that gives a signal to other countries, we can go down a route where we don't have to respect human rights. If America goes down a route of setting up internment camps for immigrants, which we're busy doing on the southern border at the moment, the same thing holds. Any country dealing with asylum seekers, any country with an influx of refugees is going to think, all right, we have a green card. We have the right to go ahead and say, all right, we're going to treat immigrants as shabbily as possible because the United States does it. And so I do think we're at an inflection point. Now, does that mean that the world in 10 years will look like the world of the late 1930s? Who knows? I mean, history never repeats itself exactly. But it's certainly a dangerous moment when America basically tells the rest of the world the old liberal rules of the game, the Enlightenment ideas, the universalist ideas that have guided politics more or less successfully in this hemisphere for many, many decades, that those rules no longer apply. And I think that's the moment we're in.
You mentioned internment camps. Some people are complaining about this privately run camp for children that's run near Miami. In your reporting down in Miami, have you visited that camp by any chance?
You know, I'm actually not reporting on immigration here. I'm reporting on Amendment 4 and the reenfranchisement politics. So the answer is no. But when I was in Arizona last week, I was interviewing people who had families who'd been released from some of these camps. So they've been held for a certain number of days, and then because there are limits on how long children have been held, children can be held. After a certain number of days, ICE was just basically dumping these families onto the streets of Phoenix and Tucson and Yuma and a few other places. And the thing is, these people were destitute. They had no money, they had no cell phones, they weren't even told oftentimes what cities they were being dropped off in. And many of them were really, really ill because they've been living in these appalling incarceration conditions for days or weeks at a time. And so many of them had hacking coughs, they had fevers, they were contagious. And it's just such an awful way to treat destitute, desperate families who have walked for hundreds and hundreds of miles. Nobody does that out of choice. You only walk for hundreds and hundreds of miles and throw yourselves on the mercy of the Border Patrol if you have nothing left to lose. You know, if you're completely destitute where you come from, if your village is controlled by drug gangs, if you're being extorted and told unless you pay up, your family is going to be killed. And for people to go through all of that and to come to a country which has the Statue of Liberty as its symbol and to arrive in this country and then be locked up in internment camps, to me, it's just beyond cruel. It's a deliberate slide into government-sponsored sadism.
Didn't the president compare the facilities to Disneyland at one point?
He did. And, you know, he said that there are bad dudes coming up and that they're coming up here and it's really like a Disneyland holiday. And, you know, this Disneyland holiday he's talking about involves being put into incredibly crowded facilities. I spoke to people, some of whom were in rooms with 150 other people. They were sleeping on concrete floors in freezing conditions with two toilets between 150 people. And they were surrounded by barbed wire. They weren't allowed to hug each other or do any physical contact. And when they asked for medical attention, they were mocked.
The idea that this is somehow a sort of Disneyland jaunt, I mean, nobody in their right mind would think that the conditions in the southern border internment camps resemble anything like Disneyland. I mean, you know, the fact that Trump could say that shows there's a fundamental empathic part of his personality that has just withered.
Our guest is Sasha Abramski. He'll be speaking this Sunday in St. Petersburg. We'll tell you about that in a moment. He's a longtime writer for The Nation magazine, and his latest book is Jumping at Shadows. So, Sasha, I know you've got to go, but let me ask you one more question. Just a few weeks ago, the president, you know, in an interview with Breitbart, the conservative website, said that he had the police, the military, and biker gangs in his corner, and how wonderful it was that they weren't violent. When the president said that, what did you make of that? What was he saying?
He was essentially doing what he always does, which in a way that just about leaves room for plausible deniability. He was inciting violence. And he was basically saying, if I need to, I can call out paramilitaries. And this is what strongman leaders have always done, whether it's Perón in Argentina or whether it's Pinochet in Chile or the Greek hunters in the 1960s and 70s in Greece. Strongmen leaders always rely on a combination of state force and paramilitary force. And what Trump was basically saying is, I've got an awful lot of heavily armed supporters, and if push comes to shove, and if I'm investigated or if I'm impeached, I can just say the word and some of those people will come onto the streets with weapons. And it's absolutely terrifying that somebody with as much power as Donald Trump has could flirt with the idea of paramilitary violence. So that was my take, that we're entering a deeply dark moment politically where the world's most famous democracy is now led by people who can flirt with the idea of paramilitarism.
And what stops the slide towards paramilitarism or civil war or...
Well, you know, I mean, civil war is, you know, we're probably a long way from civil war at this point. But I think what stops the slide to a sort of casualized paramilitary violence is mass alertness that... We who do not want paramilitary violence have to be willing to call this out. We have to be willing to protest nonviolently. We have to be willing to take to the streets nonviolently. And we have to be willing to push our legislators in Congress to do their duty and to rein in an out-of-control executive. And, you know, there's a lot of debate at the moment. Is it politically pragmatic for the Democrats to go down the road of impeachment? It shouldn't have anything to do with pragmatism. There is a constitutional duty that Congress has, that if the president goes down an extra legal route, they open impeachment proceedings. And there are so many places now, including the calls to paramilitarism, where you could say Trump is stepping outside the legal bounds, that it seems to me that it's, you know, absolutely vital that Congress basically does what it's supposed to do and reins the executive in, because without that, we really could slide towards autocracy. And that slide could happen very quickly.
So standing up for democracy and standing up for the rule of law is the way to preserve our country.
Absolutely. I mean, this idea that, oh, well, the economy is humming along and therefore we as individuals can just sort of opt out of the moment and we can say, all right, we don't like Trump's crude tweets and we don't like the way he talks, but why should we be overly concerned? Well, the reason is because we're citizens of a democracy, and in a democracy, we all have an obligation to stay informed. And this idea that you can just say, well, I don't like Trump and I'm going to sort of ignore it and hope that eventually he goes away. Well, he may or may not go away, but certainly if we don't want him to do long-standing damage to the fabric of the country, we have to stay engaged in this moment.
Sasha Abramski, thanks a lot for coming on WMNF. Do you have a website?
Yeah, I do. It's called theabramskireport.com. theabramskireport.com. Theabramskireport.com.
Sasha, thanks a lot for coming on MNF.
My pleasure, Rob. Thanks so much.
All right. Thank you. Sasha Abramski will be speaking this Sunday, that's May 19th, at 4:30 at Temple Beth El as part of the Leif Neeson Social Justice Lecture Series. There's no charge for this event, by the way. You can call 727-347-6136 for more information. And Sasha is the author of a brand new book called Jumping at Shadows, The Triumph of Fear and the End of the American Dream. He's a longtime writer for The Nation magazine, and his articles appear on the website Truth Out. Well, you're listening to WMNF in Tampa, 88.5 FM. I'm Rob Lori. Thanks for tuning in. If you'd like to comment about anything you've heard here so far, you're welcome to call up at 813-239-9663. And our email address is dj@wmnf.org. Here's an email about Red Tide. Bruce writes this. He says, has coastal nutrient pollution caused the Florida Red Tide? And he says, I read about this recently and heard you pass on the myth that nutrients are the main cause. I used to think so, too. Seems it's not the case. And he quotes the Moat Marine Lab website. And the Moat Marine Lab website says this: in contrast to the many tides, red tide species that are fueled by nutrient pollution associated with urban or agricultural runoff, there is no demonstrated direct link between nutrient pollution and Karenia brevis red tide formation or the frequency, how often they occur. And that's from the Moat Marine Laboratory website. I know some critics of that theory say that Moat Marine has received funding from the phosphate industry. So they're not so sure that you can trust what's on the Moat Marine Lab website. But Bruce, thank you for that email. The debate continues. Certainly a lot of scientists are saying that there is a direct connection between red tide and the elevated nutrient levels in our water. 813-239-9663. Skip's on Anna Maria Island, and Skip says, we are on the beaches of Anna Maria Island every morning on our ATVs. We do the turtle watch. The Gulf side is clear. The mat algae, the bloom green algae, and the trace red tide is all in the bay and the canals between Anna Maria Island and the mainland, writes Skip. Skip, thank you for that. 813-239-9663 is our phone number. David writes this: I continue to be perplexed by Trump supporters. I feel that they continue to support Trump primarily because he's bringing out the inner racist that is unfortunately present in many Americans. Would it help if more Americans got a passport and visited other countries? Also, what is your guest take on George Conway's opinion on Trump that he's mentally ill or brain damaged? I often think we need to invoke the 25th Amendment, writes David. All right, that's David's email. Thank you, David. And this email comes in from the 813 area code. It's signed by a person named Bubba. Okay, says Trump is a con man and a terrible role model for our children. Right, so 813. Here's another email from the 352 area code regarding the detention centers where undocumented immigrants are held near the U.S. borders. 352 says, gee, big crowds and not enough bathrooms. It does sound like Disneyland to me, writes 352. Okay, we're going to take some phone calls. Frank Knox is our phone producer today. And let's go to Byron in Sarasota. Byron, you're first today. What would you like to say?
Well, my master's degree is in geology. I taught environmental geology and meteorology, and I'm in total disagreement with Moat Marine. In fact, I think that Crosby, the head of Moat Marine, should turn his degree in because he's being dishonest with himself and his degree. If the United States Geologic Survey has done some studies, and they pretty well explain past causes of the red tide and why it forms offshore, and it's called, all the people have to do is just Google submarine groundwater and red tide, and they'll come up with the USGS study. So, yeah, I think Moat Marine has been compromised. It's like agricultural people that support Monsanto. You know, you just can't do that. You have to be independent of all this if you're going to do a critique of the problem.
And Byron, just so people know, tell us a little bit more about your background. You don't have to give your last name or anything or where you work, but just why should people trust you?
Why should they trust me?
Yeah.
My wife asks me that question all the time.
I'm sorry, but I.
Well, I have a master's degree in geology.
Mm-hmm.
I taught science, and then I taught. I did work for the federal government. I did teach at a small college, and I did teach introductory geology, and we primarily studied the local geologic environment. I did teach at a college level meteorology, and I understand climatology. And my degree is old. I graduated from college in 1965, but geology, you know, it's not like medicine where it constantly changes. There's changes and advances, obviously, but...
Yeah. Well, Byron, I didn't mean to put you on the spot. I just wanted to get a better idea of your background. So, Byron, thanks. Thanks for calling in.
Yeah. Is there any other question you want to ask me?
No, but is there anything else you want to tell me?
Well, when they say, this is what I dislike about Molt Marine. If you look at their website, they do not want to say that climate change is any results of man, anthropological changes. And what they're doing is doing a disservice to the public by doing that, because then it relieves the republic, the public, of any responsibility of their actions. And this algae, red, I know they're different species than that, but it occurs all over the world. We have green algae occurring in the Great Lakes. You know, the red tide, that algae that's out there, or bacteria, whatever you want to call it, is always present in the water. And all you do is have to furnish the nutrients for it to have the population explode. So when they say there's no red tide, what they're saying is that there's not enough count out there to affect your health, maybe.
All right. Byron, thanks a lot. Thanks for coming on MNF.
Okay, thanks for giving me a chance.
All right, I'm glad you got it on. You know, one of the people that we've had as a guest here on Radioactivity is Dr. Larry Brand, who is with the University of Miami Rosenstiel School of Marine and Atmospheric Science. He was down in the Bradenton area, gave a talk a few weeks ago, and he says that there is a direct connection between the algae in the water and the increased nutrients in the water. Now, you can look up Brand's research. He has a PhD from Woods Hole Oceanographic Institute and from MIT. So that's one of the places you could look for a differing opinion from Molt Marine. Let's take some more phone calls. Our phone number is 813-239-9663. Our email address is dj@wmnf.org. And we're going to go to John in St. Pete. Hey, John, what would you like to say?
Hey, Rob, how are you doing?
I'm good.
I'm a lifelong resident. I was born in Florida, and I've been a scuba diver since I was 15 years old, and I'm 65 now. And the water quality in our state has gone down the tubes. The river. If anybody's ever been to Crystal River, I got my checkout dive in 1968, Crystal River, and it was beautiful. Today, I was there 3 months ago, and you can barely see for the algae and from the runoff from, you know, humans being so close to the water. Mm. And I also think it's also from septic tanks as well. So you can actually see in Crystal River the impact that man has on the quality of water around. And it's not just Crystal River. It's many springs, because I do a lot of spring diving. And there's algae and growth that was never there before. And it's all because of man.
John,
we need to protect our waters.
John, how is the Itchituckney doing these days?
The Itchituckney was, it's not that bad, but it's not what it once was. I mean, if you've been over time in these waters, you can see it depends on what's upstream.
Yeah, you know, I can remember going down some of the springs here in Florida 30 years ago, and the water was as clear as gin.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Like I said, I was born here in 53, and I've been able to see it with my own eyes. And last year I was in the Keys, and the amount of coral is just insane. It's not what it once was, and it's really a shame.
So what would you advocate as a scuba diver? What are you hearing about the best way to clean it up?
It's almost at a tipping point. I don't know with the warming of the water and the amount of nutrients going into an agriculture in I like to go camping on the 10,000 Islands, and my buddies and I do it once a year. And you can see, you can just see the runoff or from agriculture, sugar, and all that coming down and emptying in Florida Bay. It's just, it makes you almost want to cry.
Well, we got to do something about it. There's no doubt about
Absolutely.
It. I mean, when I first started swim and kayak and go down some of these springs 30 or 35 years ago, they were like paradise, like some of the most beautiful
Absolutely.
Spots anywhere on the planet.
And it's not only that, it's the amount of garbage that you'll see. There isn't a part of a coastline that you can't find garbage.
Yeah.
I do a lot of kayaking as well, and just go out to Whedon Island. Anybody, I invite you to go out there and try and find a part of the mangroves that doesn't have straws and plastic bags there.
Yeah, we got to clean it up. All right, John, thanks a
yes,
lot.
Sir.
Thanks.
Thank you.
All right, good to hear from you. We got two open lines, 813-239-9663. Mike writes this regarding ATVs on the beach. He is commenting about one of our emailers. He says, ATVs destroy beach and habitat. Do you agree? You know, I've seen the turtle watchers on many beaches around here, and it seems to me what they do is they drive right along the shoreline in their ATV as early as they can in the morning, as soon as the sun is up, and they're looking for that trail that the mother turtle leaves as she goes up to the sand dune line and lays her eggs. And now, I've not seen an ATV drive over the sand dunes, and I've not seen them really destroy any turtle nests. And I've seen a lot of turtle nests in my time here. So, Mike, I don't agree. I think ATVs might be one of the most efficient ways to get up and down the beach and then stake out where the turtle nests are before the crowds come to hang out at the beach. You want to stake out the place and tell people, don't destroy this nest. And Mike, if you've got a better idea, Mike is writing from North Carolina, so I don't know if he's got a better idea, but 813-239-9663. Here's Jean. She sends a picture of brown globs showing up at the docks in Tierra Verde near Fort DeSoto, and it is an ugly brown mess, and it doesn't look like it's something that you'd find in a sewer system. Gene, thank you for that. 813-239-9663 is our phone number. Let's go to Matt in Odessa. Matt, you're on. What would you like to say? Hi, Matt.
I was calling about something completely different, if that's all right.
Okay.
I was calling about, I saw Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez talking about how corporations are, you know, buying control of our government and laying it out step by step how they do it. And I was reading a book, The History of Rome, and it showed the exact same thing in the Senate, how the 2,150 years ago, you know, like 60 BC, the Senate was doing the same thing, controlling everything in the government, because they had the power to buy influence. They had the power to erect a wall around their state to keep out tax collectors. They had the power to control the government. And when anybody would push against them, that they would just become irate and would not let any control, you know, and not lose any control of the government. And what, like the one who really the famous one was Julius Caesar, though he was from a famous family, though poor, he was from the same class as all the people who clogged up the Senate, that he fought to get the soldiers paid when they returned from war. He fought to get land for the soldiers. He fought to get bread for the people, all the things that were against his own class. That's why they called him a traitor to his class, like FDR.
Well, that's an interesting topic, you know, and this is my answer is going to be a little bit off. There's a great show that we have on HD3 called Letters in Politics, and for the last 2 weeks, the host of that show, Mitch Jezerich, has been talking about the parallels between the collapse of the Roman Empire and modern-day America, and I'll just say one more thing, and that is that some of the writers at the Tampa Bay Times over the years, specifically Howard Troxler, who used to write for the Tampa Bay Times before he retired and moved up to North Carolina, used to write about legalized bribery in Tallahassee, how they've essentially legalized bribery so that if you're a big corporation and you want to give untold amounts of money to a politician, there are legal ways to do it, and the politician never has to say that they have a conflict of interest, even though their political committee has gotten giant amounts of money from corporations. That essentially we've legalized bribery here in the state of Florida. So those are two things I'd look up. Try to listen to Letters in Politics and try to look up those old Howard Troxler columns.
I will. Thanks.
All right, Matt. Thanks a lot. Good point. And let's go to John in Palmetto. John, you're on M&F.
Hey, Rob. Thanks. I would like to leave everybody with the idea that DeSantis is going to follow up on Scott's ASR well. That's aquifer storage and recovery. And those, the science is just totally, totally bogus. Excuse me. It's been proven many times, and there's a lot of scientists that have jumped in on it. There's about $6 billion that's going to go virtually down the tubes. And he's going to continue that around the Lake Okeechobee area as a gentleman who goes down to 10,000 Islands, which is that's all pretty much a scam too. It's CH2M Hill, which is the engineering company that builds desalination plants, and they have like 11 desalination plants. Scheduled over the next decade, all around southern Florida. Now they own the diaphragms and the filters for the desalination plants. You know, they all over the world, they pretty much run water systems all over the world, and mostly U.S. bases and things like that. They're huge, and if we can do anything to put the brakes on that ASR well, those ASR wells, that might be just one step. But my experience is, and I grew up down there. I was born down there, and I grew up there. And in Ishtikuni and Crystal Springs and all those, it's gotten so bad. I don't think we have so much saltwater intrusion. I think we're behind the eight ball.
All right, John, thank you. Thank you for your comments. Here's an email from Jerome. He says, I clean pools for a living, and without a doubt, high phosphate levels increase algae growth. It's not the red tide type. It's yellow, black, and green algae that grows in pools when there's too much phosphate, writes Jerome. Thank you very much for that. And 352 writes, I thought geology was the study of rocks. It is the study of geologic formations, including rocks. Thank you for that, 352. And let's go to Danny in Tampa. Danny, you're on. What would you like to say?
Yeah, Rob, good morning. Real quickly, I think that this whole thing with this latest dangerous situation that the Trump administration has got us into now with Iran, it's very, very painfully thin evidence. And even the British has told us that's not exactly true. And then you have John Bolton. Gee, what a surprise! We knew this was going to happen eventually. He's been wanting to do this to Iran for years, and have him start a war regime change. He's called it. And Trump, he goes from dove to hawk, hawk to dove to hawk every other day, every other minute. You don't know where he's at in the situation. And then now he's boxed in because now he doesn't want to be seen as weak to his base. You know, because he always wants to seem strong. So that's the danger here, that we have to depend on him to keep John Bolton and you know that Israel, and you know that Saudi Arabia, and you know that Bolton, they've been wanting to do this for a while, so they're probably cheerleading this. So it's a dangerous situation, and very, very dangerous on this guy's part. So I don't just say when we have to depend on Donald Trump to go ahead and be the guy over here who tries to sit to like the Robert Kennedy to avoid war here. I mean, that's a very, very
It was Trump that put Pompeo in the position of State Department head, and also put Bolton as his national security advisor.
But Pompeo's another one. I mean, it's another war hawk. I mean, it's you know what? And I'll tell you what. I think, I don't know about the impeachment, because I know that it would be in the Senate, he would be acquitted. But I think we should at least start impeachment hearings, and at least try that, and do that. Now, that's what they're trying to do. I understand that they're being you know, everywhere they go, you know, that they're not obeying these subpoenas at all, which is unbelievable, by the way.
Yeah, they should obey the rule of law. Danny, thanks a lot.
Thank you. Have a great weekend.
You too, Danny. Rose writes, when I moved to Florida in 1966, we could reach into the sand at Indian Rocks Beach and pick up live sand dollars and starfish. When I left in 1995, that was already gone. The last time I visited was 2016, and I was shocked how relatively murky the water was, even at Caladese Island. Well, if you want to comment about today's show, you can call us up at 813-238-8001. Record your comment on extension 115, and I'll play your comments back Monday morning at 11 o'clock. Stay tuned. Janelle Irwin is coming up next on the Midpoint Program. I'm Rob Lurie. Have a great weekend. Thanks to Frank Knox, our phone producer today. This is WMNF, Tampa, St. Petersburg.